This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Tuesday edition, the Air Force has punished a colonel who refused to affirm same-sex marriage. Michael Berry, Senior Counsel and Director of Military Affairs with First Liberty Institute, represents the colonel. He'll be here to discuss the case in just a moment. And according to a new study, a majority of voters support President Trump's pro-life agenda. We'll talk with former Congresswoman Marilyn Musgrave, Vice President of Government Affairs at the Susan B. Anthony List. Also, we have lots of pastors who listen to this program. You may be interested to know that according to Lifeway Research and Alliance Defending Freedom, if you believe Congress should end government oversight of your pulpit, well, you're not alone. Scott McConnell, Executive Director of Lifeway Research, is here to explain later on Washington Watch. We'll also be taking your calls a little later here on the program. The website, if you happen to miss anything on your way home, is TonyPerkins.com. That's right, TonyPerkins.com. By the way, information there, if you're interested in traveling with us to Israel next spring, April the 17th through the 27th, Michelle Bachmann will be with us, General Jerry Boykin, former ambassador, Ken Blackwell, Joel Rosenberg, New York Times bestselling author, will also be with us as we visit some of the historical sites there in Israel, but also wade into the geopolitical realm of today. That's coming up this spring, April 17th through the 27th. If you'd like more information, go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, if you if you're a Twitter person, I'm on Twitter at TPerkins. Okay, earlier this year, the Air Force punished Colonel Bohannon by suspending him from his command and recommending against his promotion to Brigadier General after the colonel, after his religious beliefs, prevented him from personally signing an optional, unofficial spouse appreciation certificate for the same-sex spouse of one of his retiring subordinates. Joining us now is Michael Berry, Senior Counsel and Director of Military Affairs with First Liberty Institute, who is representing Colonel Bohannon. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be back with you.
Well, let's see if I have this right. The Air Force is discriminating against the colonel for declining to participate in an optional activity. Is that right?
That's right. In fact, the Air Force investigator said that what Colonel Bohannon did was illegal discrimination under Air Force policy.
So it's under Air Force policy that he discriminated against this same-sex couple by not signing this optional document?
Yeah, and it gets actually worse than that, Tony, that they've said that it was illegal discrimination even though a two-star general signed the certificate instead of Colonel Bohannon, which, you know, to anybody who served in the military, you would take the signature of a two-star on your, you know, your award or your certificate over the signature of a colonel any day. But nevertheless, the retiring airman did not like that Colonel Bohannon was not able to personally sign it, and he was offended by that, filed a formal complaint. Meanwhile, Colonel Bohannon had requested a religious accommodation, which, of course, would excuse him from, even though it was optional anyway, but it would have just, you know, kind of mooted the whole point anyway and made it, given him an excuse. The Air Force investigator said it wouldn't have mattered. Even if he'd been given that accommodation, which the Air Force refused to grant, they said he still would have been guilty.
He would have been guilty based upon Obama-era policies or what?
Yeah, there's an Air Force policy directive that is still on the books that arose under the Obama era, and it's directly contrary to the DOD's policy guidance. It's directly contrary to the policy memo that was issued by the Department of Justice just last week, declaring protection for religious freedom in all federal agencies, which includes the DOD. And so, in essence, you have this, you know, dubious rogue Air Force policy that's still on the books that hasn't been, you know, rescinded. and that's now being used the basis to claim that this is illegal discrimination.
So, the policies that have are actually not policies. The guidance that came out from the Department of Justice saying that religious freedom, religious expression should be accommodated, and that religious freedom will be promoted and protected in this administration. This is where we see the conflict between that and the existing policies of Barack Obama. So what needs to happen then is that DOD has to change their policies to come in line with this new guidance coming out from the Trump administration. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. That they need to get rid of the guidance that's no longer congruent with current policy and the law, for that matter. It's not just a policy issue; it's a legal issue, because of course, under the First Amendment and the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which applies to the military, Colonel Bohannon has every right to seek a religious accommodation, to be excused from doing something that violates his religious beliefs, and the fact that this is an optional, unofficial form, I can't imagine the Air Force being able to argue that this is somehow absolutely necessary for mission accomplishment, that he be the only one who signs the form. So, you know, the mission was able to be accomplished via a two-star general instead of a colonel. And nevertheless, that, like you said, Tony, the Air Force still wants to hang its hat on, well, you know, we've got this policy that says that you have to do this.
Now, I mean, Michael, as you explain this, the way this sounds to me and as I've read it, I mean, I think this is further proof that the LGBTQ agenda, those who are pushing that, isn't about freedoms for homosexuals and the like. It's about oppression. It's about forced celebration by all who think or believe differently than the left. I mean, if there was accommodations made here, no one missed a optional certificate. Nobody was deprived of anything. The colonel just said, look, I can't do this. I'm going to have someone else take care of it for me because of my religious concerns.
And that's how the system is supposed to work, right? And the colonel, who is, you know, a good upstanding officer and gentleman, he did not want to leave his subordinate, you know, his NCO empty-handed, or his spouse in this case, empty-handed. And he also didn't want him to walk away with an inferior signature, if you will. So, you know, the right solution and balance was struck to make sure that the retiring airman and his spouse walked away with what they deserve, they rightfully deserved, after many years of honorable service. The problem is that the Air Force would not likewise accommodate Colonel Bohannon's beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And then for them to turn around and say, well, because it's this policy that says that you have to do this. And again, I mean, these are, you know, holdover kind of middle-level managers from the Obama administration. You know, it's been well documented that a lot of the confirmations have been slow to come to fruition within the DOD in particular, a lot of the President Trump nominations within DOD. And so you've got a lot of people who are still there that were put in place under President Obama that are probably still operating under those policies and under his, you know, kind of his regime.
But whatever happened to the left in their mantra about imposing values on other people? You know, that's what they say. The conservatives just want to impose their values on other people. That's exactly what they are doing. They're forcing people to become party to something that they morally and from a religious standpoint disagree with. They're forcing them to become a party and a celebrant of it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, my question is, you show me where the retiring airman or his spouse walked away empty-handed. Please demonstrate where they were not able to have a retirement ceremony with full, you know, military honors, where the spouse did not get a retirement certificate, that it wasn't signed by somebody of the requisite stature. And then you might have an argument that he wasn't treated equally or fairly, et cetera. On the other hand, it's very easy to point to Colonel Bohannon and say, this guy's career, he's actually suffered real harm to his career. He was on the fast track to be promoted to a one-star general, which, as we know, is no small feat in the military. And so now to have to basically see his career end as a colonel, which in and of itself is still, you know, quite an accomplishment. But
right.
But still, I mean, the difference between a retirement as a colonel and a retirement as a general, who knows, he could have gone on to become a two-star, a three-star, et cetera. We're talking, you know, a substantial financial amount, not to mention the prestige, et cetera, that comes with being a retired general officer.
I would think, Michael, just, you know, again, I don't have all the facts, but just looking at the reports of this, that the fact that he approached, obviously, a superior officer, a two-star general, and requested that he sign this optional certificate for a non-military person, it's the spouse of the retiring NCO, I would think that that in and of itself would provide the cover that an office, another, a higher-ranking officer actually stepped in and performed that duty.
Well, yeah, I mean, and to clarify, just that it was actually the two-star that went to Colonel Bohannon and said, "Hey, don't worry about it. Let me sign it." And Colonel Bohannon said, "That sounds like a fantastic solution." He readily agreed with that. Thought that was probably the best way to meet the airman's needs, while balancing his own, you know, desire and right to freely exercise his own religious convictions. And yet now, you know, as we've said, you know, he's being punished for that.
So what's the next step in this, Michael? Where does Colonel Bohannon seek justice from?
Well, right now we've appealed basically the punishment, if you will, to the Secretary of the Air Force, Heather Wilson, and we've asked that Secretary Wilson will first keep her promise that she made during her confirmation hearings that she would protect and respect religious freedom for all airmen. She very publicly said that, and so we, you know, we're confident that she will honor that promise. And then not only, you know, justice for Colonel Bohannon, but also you've got to rescind that bad policy and replace it with clear guidance, because I'm certain that Colonel Bohannon is not the first or the last officer that's going to face a situation like this, and we need to make sure this doesn't happen again for anybody else.
Now, Michael Berry, with your work with First Liberty Institute, your focus is very heavily on military. Have these policies had a chilling effect upon the religious expression among members of the military?
Absolutely. I mean, if you just look at some of the comments on, you know, when these articles make it onto the internet and so on and so forth, a lot of the comments are from people who are saying, "Well, I served and the rules say X, Y, Z. You know, everybody knows you're not allowed to, you know, engage in illegal discrimination, so on and so forth." And so it's this misconception, first of all, as to what the law allows, what the law protects, et cetera, what the rights, simply the rights of people who serve in the military. I remember when we, you know, you and I have discussed the Monifa Sterling case that unfortunately the Supreme Court didn't take, but a lot of the criticism was, well, when you join the military, you give up your First Amendment rights. You don't have a right to do that. So, yes, I mean, that it creates a lot of confusion, misunderstanding, and misconceptions about what the law is, what the rights of our service members are. And, you know, when you join the military, you do give up some freedom, but you don't give up your religious freedom.
Not your most fundamental freedom. Not at all. Michael Berry, thanks so much for joining us, and we will stay in touch with you about this case.
Thank you very much.
All right, Michael Berry, First Liberty Institute. You can go to TonyPerkins.com, find out more. You know, this is why we've got to continue to push in this administration to make sure religious freedom is protected, and we will. All right, coming up next, a new poll finds a majority of voters support two pro-life policies that are front and center in Washington right now. We'll talk with former Congresswoman Marilyn Musgrave. She's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
We've gone from give me liberty or give me death to take care of me, please. What has happened to the American spirit? Our colleges were once bastions of free speech. Now they're bastions of speech codes. Our culture once rewarded independence. Now it rewards victimhood. Parents once taught their kids how to fend for themselves. Now, any parent who tries may get a visit from the police. In a talk about his new book, Not a Daycare, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, takes a hard look at what's happening around the country, including demands for safe spaces and trigger warnings at universities like Yale, Brandeis, and Oberlin, and digs in his heels against the sad and dangerous dumbing down of the American spirit. Dr. Piper has become known for his passionate defense of intellectual freedom, and he challenges the intolerant tolerance of today's academic community. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch. Again, that's frc.org/speakers. In a free country like ours, it's easy to forget that slavery still exists. Human beings are being trafficked and sold for sex against their will. Human trafficking is a horrifying scourge that continues to haunt America, particularly through the proliferation of illegal online transactions between traffickers and buyers. As part of the FRC Speaker Series, Congresswoman Ann Wagner discusses congressional anti-human trafficking initiatives and how the conservative community can best be engaged in combating this horrific crime. Congresswoman Wagner, who introduced highly anticipated legislation in April that allows states and victims to fight online sex trafficking, focuses on online sex trafficking via Backpage.com and other websites, and confronting the demand for sex trafficking in American culture. Find out more about Congresswoman Wagner's recent legislation and ways you can help stop trafficking at frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Washington Watch. The website is TonyPerkins.com. All right, a new national poll released yesterday by Susan B. Anthony List finds that a majority of voters support two of President Trump's major campaign promises and two initiatives that are front and center in Washington, D.C. right now. First, voters support the rollback of the HHS contraceptive mandate, which happened a week ago Friday, which forces employers to be complicit in the provision of abortion-inducing drugs, regardless of their deeply held religious and moral objections. That's one of the things that actually happened with religious organizations. That was a rollback. Little Sisters of the Poor, you might remember hearing about that. Secondly, voters support legislation limiting abortions, what's known as the pain-capable bill, after 5 months of pregnancy, a point by which science shows unborn children can feel pain, excruciating pain. With us now is former Congresswoman Marilyn Musgrave, who is now the Vice President of Government Affairs at the Susan B. Anthony List. Marilyn, welcome to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, Tony.
You know what? It's a pretty exciting time for pro-lifers because a lot of things are happening.
It's like nothing I've ever seen in my lifetime, and I've been a pro-life advocate for decades, and what encouraging times we're having right now. It's such a blessing. And when you look at this polling, it's incredible to me that we have a majority of Americans agreeing with us. Sometimes we kind of put our head down because we feel like we're losing so much ground, but right now, Tony, we are gaining ground, and it is wonderful.
Yeah, and part of this is just having these discussions. This was the third time that the House passed the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. And as a result, the support for that is growing as the nation has a conversation. I mean, 62.2% of Americans support the policy that passed the House once again. The president said he's going to support it. Yesterday in the Rose Garden with Majority Leader McConnell, McConnell pledged that there would be a vote in the Senate. So there's no reason for the Congress not to move on this and put it onto the president's desk.
That's exactly right. And I think another very encouraging thing from the polling is the fact that millennials support this at 78%. You know, sometimes we feel like we're losing the cultural war with our young people. Hey, we're not losing them on this one. And then among African Americans, 70% support, and Hispanics, 57%. So this crosses party lines. And I think that, as you said, Tony, the more this bill is brought up and people read about it and hear about it, they're saying, hey, this is late-term abortion. They might even call themselves pro-choice, but they say, after that point in the pregnancy, stop the abortion. And it's been an incredible thing for our research arm, Charlotte Lozier Institute, to be very involved at the state level on unborn child pain-capable acts, sending our doctors into states like Ohio and places like that to testify. These doctors are associate scholars with our research arm, Charlotte Lozier Institute, and to hear a doctor talking about the child feeling pain at that point in the pregnancy is a very powerful thing.
Well, and we've seen over the last 10 years a significant success rate of pro-life legislation at the state level, as we've seen pro-life governors, pro-life legislators elected. And we've seen, I think it's close to 300 more pieces of pro-life legislation that has passed through the states in the last 10 years.
It's been quite a reaction to the former president, the most pro-abortion president ever, to see these state legislatures and governors taking these pro-life actions. You know, Tony, I really seen the Unborn Child Pain Capable Act on a similar trajectory as partial birth abortion ban, mm-hmm. where it was passing in the states, more states, and then finally went to the federal level. And in this one, the difference in the strategy is we're going in the states and we're also having it legislated at the federal level. And this is especially telling for those senators, those particular Democrats who said they're pro-life, that really represent pro-life states. Hey, what an opportunity for their voters to see where they stand on banning abortion after the fifth month of pregnancy. So I'm very happy that the president and Leader McConnell have committed to this. As you said, it's passed the House of Representatives. Trent Franks is the sponsor. The pro-life women led the debate. Very, very well done. And Americans are getting this. This is past that fifth month of the pregnancy. And people across the political spectrum are saying abortion should be banned after that point in the pregnancy. So we need that vote in the Senate. Looking forward to the day where it will be signed into law. We have a lot more work to do, as you know, Tony, in the United States Senate to get to that 60-vote threshold. But that's our goal, and I believe that one day we'll see this signed into law.
And folks should weigh in with their United States senators and encourage them Absolutely. To be supportive of the measure. Lindsey Graham, the chief sponsor of the bill in the Senate. So every vote is going to matter in the Senate. You've got to get past that 60-vote threshold just to vote on it, and then 51 votes needed to pass it. Marilyn, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate the great work that you all are doing over there at the SBA list.
Well, right back at you. It's always good to be with you, Tony. Thank you.
Thank you, Marilyn. Marilyn Musgrave from the Susan B. Anthony List, former Colorado Congresswoman. Great, great pro-life advocate. And by the way, folks, just to put it in perspective, as she made mention about how great it is in the pro-life movement right now, one of the reasons is because we've got a president that's following through on a lot of these things. We saw the reinstatement and expansion of the Mexico City policy, which removes taxpayers from being forced to fund abortions in foreign countries, rolling back the HHS contraceptive mandate, and then the Department of Health and Human Services coming out and saying that life begins at conception. That's going to have implications for policy. So all of those critics that are out there saying, you know, why are Christians supportive of this administration? You know what? It's bearing fruit already. Okay, another poll when we come back. Lifeway and ADF team up to see what pastors think about the IRS looking over their shoulder in the pulpit. We're going to talk about that with the executive director of Lifeway Research. He joins us when we come back. Don't go away.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. All right, according to a new Lifeway research study sponsored by the our good friends over at the Alliance Defending Freedom, a majority of pastors believe Congress should end IRS oversight of sermons. More than 7 in 10 say Congress should bar the IRS from punishing a church for sermon content. And 9 in 10 say their sermon should be free from government oversight. Now, this is not just about talking about candidates and elections. It could include, which a lot of pastors did this last year, a comparison of the party platforms. I was actually the honorary chairman, I have been for the last few years, of Alliance Defending Freedom's Pulpit Initiative. And last year, several pastors, myself included, did a comparison between the Republican and the Democratic Party platforms. And let me just give you an example on the issue of sanctity of life. The Republican Party says proud to be the party that protects human life and offers real solutions for women and strongly opposes infanticide, supports the following: the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, a human life constitutional amendment, a ban on abortion at 20 weeks, and when unborn child can feel pain. We just talked about that. An abortion based upon sex or disability. A ban on dismemberment abortion. It goes on. There's a whole list. Safety regulations for clinics. A ban on human cloning. And on and on and on it goes. The Democrats calls for, this is their platform, calls for government-funded abortion on demand all 9 months of pregnancy by repealing the Hyde Amendment, bars that, of course, bars federal money from elective abortions, will overturn federal and state laws and policies that, quote, impede a woman's access to abortion. We will continue, this is a quote, we will continue to stand up to all Republicans, Republican efforts to defund Planned Parenthood, end quote. Now, here's the unique thing about that. We talked about this during the election, but Lee Payne, a professor at Stephen F. Austin State University, did a study of party platforms from 1980 to 2004. And overall, Democrats in Congress voted for positions that matched their platform 74% of the time in the past 30 years, while Republicans did so 89% of the time. Platforms matter. This information matters because this is where when a pastor is helping Christians understand the intersection of their faith and policies, in public policies that guide this nation, that's where it happens. But the IRS is looking over the shoulder of these pastors, but hopefully not for long. Joining us now is Scott McConnell, Executive Director of Lifeway Research. Scott, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, good to be with you.
Well, Scott, I have to say, this doesn't look like there's much question as to where pastors stand on this issue of the IRS looking over their shoulder into the pulpit.
No, that's very true. Protestant pastors want Congress to act. 73% agree that the IRS should no longer be able to penalize a church based on whatever the pastor says within their sermons. And when we just talk more generically, should the government be able to penalize pastors for something that is said from the pulpit, that number jumps to 91% agreeing. Pastors very much think that that sacred desk is a place where they are sharing with their congregation how to live out your faith, and that should pertain to every area of life, and they shouldn't have to worry about a government looking over their shoulder, is definitely the sentiment that comes through in these questions.
Yeah, when you think about this, Scott, for a shepherd, a pastor who's teaching his people, when you consider the pervasive influence of government policy on our lives, I mean, it's not just one small sector. I mean, it really influences every aspect of life. And so when you are helping the people under your spiritual authority understand how the Bible intersects with public policy, I mean, how do you not do that, but do it in a way in which, in some cases, we've seen churches and pastors that have not necessarily lost their tax exemption. One church has done that, but they've had to undergo audits and they've gotten letters, threatening letters, and it has a chilling effect.
And you know, for the most part, pastors are among those who say if there's a law, it ought to be followed, and so it's troubling for them to have to think twice about what they say, that they have to think twice about the positions that they take as a church. And, you know, while neither of these questions specifically mention religious freedom, that's really the subject that's at stake here is, does a pastor, do they have the right to share biblically how to apply biblical principles to life? And if that's being limited in any way, then the question comes up, can it be limited in more ways?
Good question. We're out of time. Is it possible you can stay over for the break? I want to ask you one other question on this. I want to kind of get a breakdown of any surprises that you saw in this poll. Scott McConnell is going to stick with us. We're going to continue our conversation here. One other question on the other side of the break. I just want to see if there's any surprises that he saw as they were quizzing pastors and congregants about the role of government in overseeing and snooping on what's happening in the pulpit. And then we're going to go to your phone calls. I've got a question for you as well. So don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch and Scott McConnell on the other side of this break. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
In a free country like ours, it's easy to forget that slavery still exists. Human beings are being trafficked and sold for sex against their will. Human trafficking is a horrifying scourge that continues to haunt America, particularly through the proliferation of illegal online transactions between traffickers and buyers. As part of the FRC Speaker Series, Congresswoman Ann Wagner discusses congressional anti-human trafficking initiatives and how the conservative community can best be engaged in combating this horrific crime. Congresswoman Wagner, who introduced highly anticipated legislation in April that allows states and victims to fight online sex trafficking, focuses on online sex trafficking via Backpage.com and other websites, and confronting the demand for sex trafficking in American culture. Find out more about Congresswoman Wagner's recent legislation and ways you can help stop trafficking at frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com, an outreach of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. All right, here's the question I'm going to have for you. I've got Scott holding, and I've got one final question for him. Then I'm going to go to the phone lines. And I want to know what you think about this topic. Should pastors be free to preach the application of biblical truths, even when it comes to public policy and elections? Do you think they should be free from government interference and oversight? 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234, the number to call to get on the conversation. Scott, thanks for sticking around and hanging over the break. Here's the question I wanted, as you do a lot of research, a lot of surveys like this. Anything jump out to you in this survey?
I think the large amount of agreement from Protestant pastors, 73% agreeing the IRS should not have the power to penalize them for something they say in their sermon. The biggest surprise is that most pastors don't want to endorse candidates, and they know that most Americans don't want them to. Previous polls we've done, almost 8 out of 10 Americans don't think it's appropriate. Now, they're not talking about legality, but they don't think it's appropriate for a pastor to endorse a candidate from the pulpit. And a few years ago when we asked pastors, 87% of them don't think it's appropriate for pastors to endorse candidates from the pulpit. And yet, they were very clear that they don't think they should be penalized if they do.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where we all would love a world where there's always two or more good candidates to choose from, where all of the candidates agree with biblical positions and moral positions on things. But pastors realize that today and in the future, they may need to speak up on things that are important.
Well, and it's, and I agree with that, quite frankly. I mean, I don't necessarily think pastors, and as a pastor, I've never endorsed a candidate from the pulpit, but I think I should be free to if I want to. And I think that's where most pastors are. They shouldn't be penalized if they choose to. But, Scott, increasingly my concern is that it's not just about candidates. It's about the policy issues, which have long been moral, biblical issues, but they've been turned into political issues, and that's where churches have come under scrutiny.
Absolutely. And more and more, as our culture turns, you know, biblical values will be less and less popular. And pastors are going to need to show the contrast. They're going to need to show the difference between God's ways and the world's ways. And, you know, if that begins to be labeled as hate speech, if that begins to be labeled as unacceptable in our society, that's one thing for it to be labeled that way, but it's another to for the government to actually have the right to penalize that. And even when we surveyed Americans, most Americans do not want churches to be penalized for endorsing candidates. And so, you know, I think a lot of people were starting to put words into pastors' mouths saying that they were okay with this because, you know, because they're not endorsing candidates and they're not having those conversations. And yet, when we actually ask pastors, you know, 9 out of 10 agree that they shouldn't be having to fear that they're going to be penalized if they say something from the pulpit. And that's true of evangelicals. It's true of mainline pastors. And so among Protestant pastors, this is a very clear point that they're making.
Well, Scott, great insight. Appreciate you joining us today to discuss this poll by Lifeway and ADF. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Scott McConnell, Executive Director of Lifeway Research. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and you can follow the links over. Okay, so what do you think, folks? Do you think that pastors should be free to preach the application of biblical truths, even when it comes to public policy and elections? Should they be free to be able to say, this candidate stands for this, this candidate stands for that, this is biblically correct, this is not? Should pastors be free to do that without fear of the IRS coming in on them? The government restricting their speech. That's what the Johnson Amendment's all about, that the president's been talking about. 866-372-7234. What do you think? 866-372-7234 to get in on the conversation this afternoon. All right, just a couple of the highlights from this survey. 96% of pastors at larger churches, those with 250 or more, agree that pastors should be free from IRS harassment. 88% of pastors at small churches, fewer than 50. 86% of pastors from ages 18 to 44. 93% of pastors 45 and older. 96% of evangelical pastors agree that the government should not be looking over their shoulder into their pulpit content. And 85% of mainline pastors. I mean, look, that's just overwhelming. I mean, it's just overwhelming. All right, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Vanessa in Oklahoma. Vanessa, welcome to Washington Watch. How are you today? Vanessa, you there?
I'm doing okay.
Good. So what do you think? Should pastors be free to speak to these issues?
I think that, like I was explaining, that whenever you're talking about the truth and what God says is the truth, because I myself am studying to be one, I wouldn't feel right if God told me to tell the truth and then they watered it down and said, well, you can only tell the truth this far. But if you're wanting to show how God feels about the values and ethics that are in those platforms. I feel that they have every right to, and it should be regarded as sacred. There should be no government stepping in telling them how to preach. Whenever that happens, that won't stop. They'll start saying other things that they can't do and start trying to take over the whole idea of being in the pulpit.
Could not agree more, Vanessa.
Right.
Could not agree more. Thanks so much for the call. I mean, that's the point. If they start coming in now, if you give them the government oversight of what's said in the pulpits, where does it stop? But here's what's happened, and you hear this all the time about the violation of the separation of church and state. Let me tell you what, that wall has been breached. All right, I'm just going to tell you, that wall has been breached, but not by the church breaching, getting itself into the business of government. It's the government getting itself into the business of the church. Look, the issue of life, the issue of marriage, these were moral and spiritual issues long before they became political issues. But because the church, as we've seen, when the pastors do preach on these things and help Christians understand the intersection of their public walk with their private faith, it has an impact upon the culture. And the politicians, the godless ones, don't like that. And so they try to silence the churches because they don't want that influence in the public square. You don't see them trying to silence Hollywood. I mean, why don't they just make movies and shut up? But they make themselves into experts on everything. Of course, we know they're experts on being sexual predators. That's now becoming quite clear. But why are they not trying to silence the NFL? You know, so it goes on and on. The pastors of our country have every right to preach the truth of God's word and its application to the lives around us. Let's go to Lisa in St. Louis. Lisa, welcome to Washington Watch.
Oh, hi. Yeah, thanks for having me. I was going to ask you about the problem with, well, I don't want the government involved with what you say in the pulpit, but my cousin goes to this liberal church in California, and they suggested when Mitt Romney was running against Obama that they should not vote for Mitt Romney because he was Mormon. And I agree that Mormonism is a cult, but, you know, it seems to me like they weren't using the Bible to back up why they felt the way that people should go when it came to voting. And so I felt like that was a big problem for her.
Yeah, Lisa, good point. I'm glad you brought that up. Because my support for the pulpit to be free to preach, to be free to preach is universal. All right. Now, I there's some people have bad interpretations of the scripture, but they have, in my view, they have the right to be wrong. In fact, back in 2004. There was a church in Los Angeles. It was the All Saints Episcopal Church. And a pastor was criticizing President George W. Bush leading up to the election over his policies in, in Iraq, his military policies. Now, I disagreed with the pastor of that church in his rationale. And I'm not going to get into just war theory and all of that. But I disagreed with his rationale. But I actually publicly supported his right to say that because the IRS sent him a letter and launched an investigation. He was later cleared. But I know what is entailed in that, the harassment, the cost, the time. And that pastor, even though I personally think he was wrong, it doesn't matter. He had the right to do that. So I'm not saying that it's, please hear me, I'm not saying that it should just be theologically correct or conservative. I'm saying that the pastors who are pastors of legitimate churches, I'm not saying you can't just make up a church and say, I have a church, but they have a right to preach and to do, even if they're wrong. They have a right to do it unhindered by the federal government.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So, Lisa, I thank you for the call, and I do thank you for bringing that point up, because I think that needed to be stated. So thanks, Lisa. All right, let's go to Marilyn in Nashville. Marilyn, welcome to Washington Watch. Marilyn, go ahead. All right, let's go to Sharon in Nashville. Marilyn, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go right ahead.
I do agree with it. The pastor of my church actually recommended who to vote for. And he said he was being asked by the congregation who to pick. And he did. And I'm glad. And I was unaware of the Johnson Act and how intimidating it could be. He didn't mention it or act like he had any repercussions. But I'm very proud that he...
I think we may have lost Marilyn there, but if a pastor wants to endorse a candidate and his church is asking him, supporting him in that, look, a pastor should be free to do it. And some are not comfortable in doing that because they don't spend, I mean, that's not their world, but they certainly can talk about the positions. And a lot of churches will actually do voter guides. Now, they'll team up with their state policy council, or we do them for most federal races at the Family Research Council, our legislative arm, FRC Action. But pastors can do that. I've actually done that in my church, where we've invited the candidates to come in, the local candidates for local races, and we've asked them questions. And we've invited the community to come and be a part of it. Churches should be free to do that. Historically, they have been at the center of their communities when it comes to the intersection of politics and policies and a biblical understanding of the application of God's truths. All right, let's go to Donna in Missouri. Donna, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. First of all, I want to say, why did I not know that you are a pastor? But secondly, I do want to express my opinion that I really do think that pastors should be able to speak on political issues from the pulpit without the fear of losing their 501c3. And I really think that's a lot of what it's based on, is that fear that the government's put in to the churches, you know, that they'll lose their tax exemption status. But the other point I want to make, too, is that it's not a violation of church and state. That issue has never been taught right. And so I personally don't see a problem. I would welcome it.
Well, and you are correct, Donna. It is not. It is not a violation of separation church and state at all. At all. So you are correct, and thank you for listening, and thank you for calling. The idea that a pastor speaking from the pulpit about government is somehow a violation of separation of churches and state is absolute nonsense. But here's how this is used. And this is what is so egregious about this. It's the IRS does do some investigations. They send these letters and they go through these audits. But that's not the worst of it. It is the fear, the false fear that's created by these leftist organizations like Freedom From Religion Foundation and Americans United for the separation of church and state, that send letters to pastors and say, if you talk about this issue or you get involved in elections, you'll lose your tax-exempt status. And it's false. It's not true. It's deceptive. Taking away the Johnson Amendment takes away the club from these leftist organizations that intimidate pastors and churches. All right, folks, out of time for today. Donna, thanks for the call. Folks, thanks for listening. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.